This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat.
I'm Visla Kumarisen.
You're listening to Digital Desires, the show that explores how screen culture is changing human interaction. We are going to talk about memes today, to critically unpack them. And joining us to help us is Samuel Lim. Welcome to the show.
Hi, nice to be here.
You've come highly recommended from mutual friends we have, namely from Imagine Malaysia. I think Jeremy is one of their members. He's your brother.
Lim, right? Yeah, he's my brother.
Small world. Yeah. Now, but you are also a freelance writer. You're into films, a recent graduate at ICT, and you've written on memes and their cultural significance. So that's why you're here with us. So
that's right.
We appreciate your time. Now, memes have become mainstream. I mean, everybody does memes now. You can download meme maker apps on your phones and stuff like that. Did you ever anticipate that it would become so mainstream and such a normal part of how we communicate?
I suppose there was always this nagging suspicion because I came from the generation, the why you do this generation, it's an old meme, in which we sort of anticipated that it would eventually blow up into mainstream culture, although it's more recognized as normie culture. And we
now, what is that?
Yeah, I was going to ask that. What is that?
Okay, it's sort of the way that, you know, just as the way the Romans used terms like plebeians or the bourgeois talk of the lower classes in that sort of more vulgar sense, but more refined connoisseur of memes refer to those who normatively patronize memes as normies.
Oh.
So yeah, it's almost like an offhand insult.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Go on. I just wanted to clarify what it is. Go on.
Sure. Yeah, and we expected that it would reach into mainstream appeal. But the beauty about it is we never knew the amount of variants that would start off it. For let's say something started a meme site about A, then somebody started B to be ironic about A, then somebody started C to be like to just bash A and B, and then D would just be this completely absurd thing that borrowed from all these elements. Mm. So they just created this whole strange tapestry of things. Yeah.
Mm. So it's just like it's almost like an ecosystem that lives off each other.
Yes.
All right. And it's also ever expanding and ever growing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Okay. So what would be for you some of the more interesting memes in the last few years?
Well, picking up on a very interesting recent development, I'm not sure if you heard of this. It's called Najib Memes for Barisan Teens.
Yes, I have come across that Facebook page, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So tell us about that.
Well, recently with the fall of the ex-premier, we're not going to be commenting on him, but
you can, though. Don't worry
about
that.
Yeah, you can.
Anyway.
Right. Mm. Well, he has sort of become an object of ridicule now because for so long, Malaysians have felt this sort of watchdog approach to the way we observe culture. And finally, when you lifted the veil off, when you finally broke the shackles, all hell just broke loose. Everyone just started making fun of him left, right, and center. They were parodying him ironically, unironically. They were sending him love letters and then making jokes out of that love letters. And even nothing was sacred. Even that video with him and Rosma just having a tender moment, it's just been like ridiculed to death at this point. It's been blown up to such ridiculous proportions. Mm. But yeah.
Okay, so how are memes different from, say, like what you described, right? Just bashing or being ironic or any of those things. How are they different from people who comment, say, on Facebook or on a YouTube or Twitter?
How why not just stop at text?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. One thing about commenters are, you sort of can sniff out what their ideologies are. I mean, I'm not saying that memes cannot be ideological because some of them literally are
right.
like pieces of propaganda. But for them, it's very clear. For example, if somebody says, I hate you, it clearly means I hate you. There's no time to interpret that. But in memes, they add this sort of imagery to it that is supposed to add another layer of connotation. So if you have a picture, for example, of Robert Downey Jr. just rolling his eyes and crossing his arms, it immediately connotes sarcasm.
Right.
So, and how that sarcasm can be interpreted is different from that comment, because some people think, are you playing off the concept of him being sarcastic to maybe say something else, or are you literally being pre-ironic about it? So, yeah.
I like it that you use the term connoisseur, because it suggests a certain refinement that you need to appreciate memes, right? Now, tell us, is there a skill set that's required to make an effective meme? I mean, what's the approach like? Or is this just a free-for-all that, you know, it doesn't really matter who does it? Or is there, like, you know, a snobbery around it or something like that?
Oh, yes. Like any culture, there is an amount of snobbery. Even within populist culture, there's an amount of snobbery. So within memes, right, the amount of social capital you gain from a meme is shock value, because that is by far the most effective way. For example, there's a recently offensive word for, let's say, for example, the N-word, but they've replaced the G's in the N-word with this strange sort of red B. And the way it's just to avoid it being downright offensive, I guess the way you can say how a meme is measured up is in the way it rides the line of the offensive without quite dipping over into the offensive.
Right.
Yeah.
It's okay. So, you know, it's obviously more than just the image that we see. It's highly nuanced. It's full of detail.
And dog whistles too, right? They speak to different codes and presumptions.
Yes. And also, I think different people would interpret it differently as well, depending on what lens you use to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really very, to use a term from other fields, meta in that sense. Yeah.
Yes, yes, it is very meta.
You're catching up with the lingo, Vizla.
Thank you. Apparently.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. Go on.
Just picking up what you said, meta, that word has been thrown around so much these days, nobody even know what it means anymore.
I was going to ask you to please explain that, you know. I mean, I understand what it means, but for our listeners,
Okay, so I'm just going to break down four stages of, this stages, in which a meme goes through. I mean, there's no hard or fast rule about this. For example, if you see a site called Socialist Memes, it's obviously about socialism.
Right.
Mm. But for just any regular image that is within public consciousness, it goes through four stages. It's the pre-ironic, oho, Thanos is big and scary, for example, because I see that being used quite a lot. So we're just going to use Thanos unironically to connote fear. Because if you want to seem intimidating, you just show Thanos with a glove and you just say something that seems offhandedly and funny. Then there's the ironic stage, in which you add a layer of sarcasm or you juxtapose him next to something silly to subvert the idea of fear. Then there is something we called, the post-ironic phase. The post-ironic phase is where it gets meta. It's when you show, for example, him with a cavalier of homoerotic imagery, if I'm allowed to say that.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, and he's there with the Avengers, or you're having just these strange sort of affairs, and you're supposed to go, oh my, that's just absurd. Mm-hmm. Then we get into the truly, truly meta place, where it's just juxtaposed with all sorts of rubbish. You just throw it on screen, and like a Jackson Pollock painting, it's just suddenly interpreted as high art. People go, oh my goodness, I've never imagined him as a California raisin.
Right.
But now he's California raisin, so yeah.
So basically, meta speaks to higher and deeper and narrower registers of appreciation that, you know, when you can read it in ways that maybe like the so-called mainstream can't, then you're being more meta or something like that.
Oh, yes. And this is a currently developing field. There's no years of structureless sort of institutions to tell you how it works. There's no institution of fine art, there's no institution of culinary, there's no institution of sort of a structure or a church of memes even. It's just developing on. And I suspect in the future, some sort of standard or barometer will be fixed. But at the current moment, it's very much just fluctuating.
But why would there be a need for a barometer? Because it seems to... Is it doing any harm necessarily? Or
No, I just... I mean, We as humans tend to sort of segregate ourselves and form into communities in which we can measure the values of these communities. And the internet sort of creates this idea that there can be no one monopoly. But as memes become more of an academic field researched and it's being developed, I suspect that in the future people will start creating maybe not a ranking for memes.
Like a canon of sorts.
Yes,
the classic
canon.
Memes, like where it all began.
Exactly.
You know, the turning points and stuff like that, right? Yeah. Which brings me to the question of boundaries, right? In that anybody could end a meme.
Yeah.
Right? So, for example, the crazy ex-girlfriend. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's still going around.
In certain circles, it has become retro and now...
Retro?
Yeah.
Okay. That was at least, what, 5 years ago or something?
That's a long time in digital.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. Where that poor girl has now become immemorialized as the crazy ex-girlfriend, right? It was a split-second photo captured, right? I mean, what do we know of the real-life repercussions of memes?
Oh, it works. It works both ways because sometimes somebody who is brought into the internet front from relative obscurity can suddenly explode into stardom, and they'll even have deals. But people who
do you have an example for that? A meme star.
Yes, there's actually this man called Sad Harold, I believe. It's just this sad old... This is man who smiles but looks like he's sad or dying on the inside. He's suddenly gotten a ton of more publicity from there. People have also... Like, there's sort of these mini celebrities that ride off the meme wave and create generally offensive comment. Like Filthy Frank or Maximovoff or iDubbbz. So... Yeah, there is very much a meme community about that. But there's also vilification because there's a very popular image of a slightly chubby feminist girl with red hair. And it's just her looking very angry. And I'll just give you an example. One of it says Mentos and she just looks fine. But then when you register in or you zero in on men, she suddenly has glowing red eyes and she's foaming from the mouth because it's supposed to emphasize the ridiculousness of feminism for some people. And then that's the joke pretty much. And everywhere she goes, she's been made pretty much into a joke. And the very cause she tries to fight for has been, in a sense, ridiculed. So there's definitely repercussions on both sides of that.
So you said that some memes have ended up retro, quote-unquote, right?
Yeah.
Now, tell me more about the periodization of these memes. Like, so there's retro, or is that just one term that you use, or is it part of the meme community that there are these retro memes, and then there's sort of contemporary memes, and they're like...
Well, retro merely means, like, they are really, really antiquated. Like, the Jackie Chan meme of him raising his hands in confusion is one that rarely anyone uses
anymore. That's true, yeah. Okay, I see that one,
yeah. So it moves from a state of, from the antiquated to antiquated.
Just basically 7-8 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, tell me one of the memes that actually have endured from the Stone Age. Like, what has actually, like, lasted?
Oh, what has lasted? Wow, that's actually a pretty hard question because there is a shelf life for memes. But if anything, I'd say the one that has lasted, there are no memes that truly are eternal. They eventually die or they eventually become something else. Yeah.
Right.
How do they die? Do they just stop being used?
No, when normies pick it up, they lose their capital immediately. They lose their steam, they lose their exclusivity, and then they sort of become the status quo. And like fashion, you just throw it away. Maybe you might bring it back in an ironic fashion, but it just becomes, once it enters mainstream, it becomes vulgar. And once it becomes vulgar, it becomes disposable, like an Adam Sandler film, for example. So, yeah.
I just realized I'm a normie. I need to be more ironic. I got my irony game up. Anyway, thanks a lot. Let's take a pause from that really, really eloquent introduction to the world of memes. I learned a lot, Samuel. But this is Digital Desires, talking about memes, its history and politics, among other things. I'm Ahmad Fahd Rahmat, alongside Vizla Kumarisan, and this is Digital Desires on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to me, Ahmad Fahd Rahmat, alongside Vizla Kumarisan, and joining us this week is Samuel Lim. He is, I suppose, a cultural commentator, recent graduate at the IACT. You're also a freelance writer.
That's right.
Into films, into popular culture, and you have given us a really good overview of meme culture. And I guess the changes that's taken place and the evolution as well over time. Now, tell us about the politics of memes, because Pepe the Frog, for example, comes to mind as a very iconic, divisive, quote-unquote, figure,
yeah.
You know, in that world. But yeah. Is he just an exception, or are there more things going on in the politics side of things that normies are not necessarily attuned to?
By far, the most acute form of politicization of memes would be Pepe the Frog.
Mm.
Simply because it started off as a joke, you know, put Pepe in a Hitler suit. You know, that would be funny because Hitler's funny. So, yeah. Put him in a Ku Klux Klan suit, you know, because that's funny. Huh? And then after that, it just escalated when people said, yes, he does belong in a Ku Klux Klan suit. And you go, wait, hold on. Wait. This started off as a joke. It's like, no, he is now the representative of the alt-right. Then he grows and grows in mass. And he just balloons in power. It's strange. So yeah.
So is did that happen because people lost that nuance or that connection with the irony of the meme, and people started to take it literally?
Yes, they start to express. One thing you need to know about the internet, especially if you've ever been to 4chan. By the way, stay away from 4chan. It's a cesspool. Or some Reddit threads. A lot of people practice this sort of nihilism. Like, they'll just say things like rape for the fun of it. Or they'll just say things like KYS, drink bleach, kill yourself. And you'll go, what do you even stand for? I'm supposed to be offended, and this offends my sensibility. But what am I being offended by? What do you stand for? Because if you stand for something, then we can at least have a conversation. But you're staring into this sort of abyss. So the people who hijack the Pepe the Frog as a Ku Klux Klan leader don't really get much flack from a nihilistic internet. In fact, most of the time, the people that don't actually believe in the ideology will play along.
Mm.
In fact, it feels like one giant bit. And there are times where the bit grows in size. For example, the whole internet decided to troll... Shia LaBeouf, when he decided to start this sort of video campaign to deride Trump, where he showed his picture on camera and he was sort of putting this flag up saying, we will not be divided, I believe. And the internet, just to troll him, not even sure if these are alt-righters or these are just nihilists or these are people just there for kicks, they scanned the star patterns, they scanned the plants nearby, they scanned the area just so they could send somebody there to take down the flag and put a Trump hat there.
Mm.
So pretty much, whether you're in on it for political gain, whether you're in on it for fun, it can always just be wrote off as a joke.
Right.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, I think this points to the ominous side of meme culture, right? In that everything is reducible to that image.
Yeah.
Right? The entire identity or entire sets of values can be encapsulated and then mass packaged. And all for a quick laugh, right? I mean, on one hand, it works sometimes when in a situation like ours, when there's a lot of censorship and these things acquire a certain subversive quality. On the other hand, like you said, the same energy can be very nihilistic, right? I mean, online sentiment is so mercurial, right? It has a dark side that really turns very easily, right? So I think this is an interesting thing to note that there are a lot of frivolous memes, but there's a lot of investment in what they can do or the power to ridicule that they have, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And also, it's interesting because I've never seen a picture of Pepe the Frog in a Ku Klux Klan suit.
Oh.
But the moment I see it now, that's the first thing I think of.
Yeah.
Right? And that's also happened because it's just been so appropriated.
Mm-hmm.
But how does that happen? Like, you know, we were talking about this before. It was just a green frog, right? But how did it become appropriated by these groups? How does that happen?
Well, based on social capital, shock value, let's say, for example, we take something as innocent as a baby or, for example, just a symbol of innocence. And then we tend to twist it into something that's vulgar, into something that's subversive. So if you take Pepe the Frog, which is just this cute, sort of maybe even slightly ugly frog that meant well, and then you know nobody's going to touch it, you tell them, okay, let's add another layer to it. Let's add more edge to it. The more vulgar, the better. The more offense we create, the better. And the more sort of outrageous it is, the better. So let's take the image of Mother Teresa, for example, although there's no Mother Teresa meme. Let's say she stands against poverty, she stands against systemic injustice. Then we'll create her a picture of her, but she'll have a gold chain around her and she'll have gold teeth. All right, then that's one layer. And then next thing we know, we're just going to have her saying just horrible racist things down below in the caption. And then after that, we're just going to have her eyes glowing at some point and she's floating in the clouds while she's just surrounded with, I don't know, maybe golden AK-47s. So it moves from subversive to offensive to absurdist. That's the way things move from there. Yeah.
And I wonder, too, how much of this resonates with the sort of alienation digital culture promotes anyway, right? We're always competitive. We're always comparing ourselves to each other.
Mm.
And everything is so dispensable and instant. And in that, something appears novel and it fades into obscurity as quickly as it became, relevant, right? And this is what we're exposed to on a daily basis, and a point of discussion that we bring out all the time in the show, how much of memes ride on that discontent, the sense that it's hard to form real connections on these platforms, but they are so necessary. And not only that, they've overtaken so much of our lives that we get absorbed in these, digital amorphous spaces that the unsavory side of it all travels through these, through these images, right? They're very easy to distribute and ridicule. Mm. So,
but also as a consumer, I wonder how much of the depth that you've just explained with regards to memes actually, how much it strikes the regular consumer. We decided to talk about memes based on a blog post was going around on a meme of a.
Of a Qajar dynasty princess.
Qajar dynasty princess.
Yeah, in like 18th century Iran or something.
And apparently she was mustachioed.
Yeah.
And,
it was like, this is the most beautiful woman in 19th century Persia.
And, apparently she was, she was so wanted. I mean, she rejected men. Some of them committed suicide or something like that, So, and the blog post discussed how untrue a lot of the stuff the meme was talking about was.
Yeah.
And most people who were just spreading it, using it, never fact-checked, never, asked questions. But it just spread.
Yeah.
And even like Pepe the Frog, right? Nobody needs to understand where it came from. Nobody needs to understand the irony of it all. But you just take it and you run with it.
I wonder how that has a lot to do with the fact that the frog is a kind of an outcast animal, right?
You
kiss the frog to be a handsome prince, and some jaded, unhappy, depressed person online could just identify, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. But even then, I don't know. I'm still struggling with this. The fact that it has so much depth, and as a consumer, you're just seeing this flat thing on a screen. And from Pepe the Frog, it can be quote unquote dangerous.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So what value do memes have?
Well, this is where we move into the realm of the conspiratorial. Memes have this amazing ability. Well, it depends on which community it is in. For example, the word love is a very singular sort of English word we have. It just means a great affinity of affection. But in Greek, for example, there are four words to talk about love. Storge, eros, agape, and...
Philia.
Philia. And in that sense, one thing that just might be simplistic to some can mean multiple things for many. And they might be even something that people can rally behind.
Mm.
And memes are sort of shorthand in which you can show that symbol. Draw a symbol of a cross, people immediately assume Christianity. Put a picture of Pepe of the Frog, people immediately assume it's something that's going to be silly or offensive. So they become a sort of new form of linguistics. Back then, back then if you wrote down "here we go again," you didn't necessarily know whether it was being sarcastic or not. Put a picture of somebody groaning or rolling their eyes, you connote that sarcasm, so you put that text. So memes offer a secondary form of linguistics to spoken English or any sort of language itself. So it's a double encodement. So memes have become in itself a language, and people have conspired to make it into a full language, which I don't know how it's going to work because it's ever developing. So you can't form, like you said, a canon of memes. And it's just going to take forever, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just going to take forever.
But do you see it as a possibility?
I like to bring it up almost as a half-truth and half-joke when I say, yeah, that's right. Memes are going to be the new language. It's going to be the new lingua franca. It's going to be a new way. It's going to be our new Latin. But a part of me hopes it's not, but it's slowly becoming so. And as people start to see the greater value for memes and how they can use it to spread their messages more effectively, it becomes more prominent.
Is there a left wing version of a Pepe the Frog or something else that's iconic in their memes? Because I know that alt-right has owned it, but does the left have a counter arsenal to that?
Well, at the risk of being presumptuous, the left have always been bleeding hearts. Bleeding hearts are not fun.
Hard for me to disagree with that these days, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're fun at clubs, they're fun at parties, you want them at barbecues.
I don't know about that too.
Okay.
But anyway, go on. Yeah. Let's grant that, but go
okay,
on.
Yeah. I mean, I've known a lot of bleeding heart liberals, and don't get me wrong, they're some of the most compassionate human beings I know. They'll fight for anything that draws breath. But in this sort of Wild West winner-takes-all environment of the net, there's no place for that.
There's a certain ruthlessness that a lot of these long-standing memes ride. You must be somewhat numb to the repercussions of sharing a real-life human being's image or the political message behind, say, an insignia, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks so much, Samuel, for enlightening us.
No problem.
It's really, really helpful. My meme knowledge is expanded.
Yeah, this has been one of the more thought-expanding shows we've done. Thank
and
you.
Relevant, too, because I'm around memes like every day. Somebody's forwarding something, you know?
Yeah.
So, but we'd love to have you over again to talk about something else. So how can our listeners get in touch with you? Do you have a handle on Twitter or Instagram or something like that?
Oh, it's a plug-in. All right.
Go for it.
Well, my boss is going to love this. You can check out our work at Movie Dash on Facebook. You can see me deconstruct different films.
What is it exactly? It's just a review site or what?
Well, it's sort of a movie exclusive sort of publication site. I believe we are a subsidiary of a wider company. So what we do there is we try to cater to movie news in Malaysia. So if you want to find out about MCU stuff, whether Thor is getting a new hammer or Iron Man is getting a braid for his hair, you can go there. If you want to figure out whether maybe you're a little bit bored and you want to read into Sicario about whether it truly is an exploration into the heart of evil, or maybe references the heart of darkness, you can read that. I wrote that, just saying.
Movie Dash. All right, Dash. All right, got it. Thank you so much.
Okay, all right.
No problem. Thank you so much.
This is it for this time. We'll be back for another episode in 2 weeks' time. I'm Ahmad Farrahma alongside Vizla Kumarisan, and this is Digital Desires, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.